Good morning to all of you this fine morning, this Mother's Day. It is certainly of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed because His compassions fail not, the psalmist said. We're thankful for that. Thankful for the privilege of being back again, be with you all this morning. I'd like to bring greetings from the brothers and sisters at the border, their brother Eloy and his mother Guillermina, also father Don Eloy or Mr. Eloy. He's a blessing as well there. Although he's not necessarily counting himself maybe always a part of the congregation, he's still an example and stands by his family. We're thankful for that. Greetings from Brother Pedro, who you got to know here weeks ago. He was so happy to see his family. It was fun to see him and Marisol walking very closely together and talking to one another personally. It was a delight to see that. How the children were glad to see their father again. Pray for them. Pray for Josue and Jessica. Some of the health problems they've had recently. Also would think here now of Brother Peter Bentz. Continue to pray for him. Heart trouble and some unexplained issues he has. He's home. Last evening we talked. He called me. He's doing pretty well there. Just like a few more answers, but he's trusting in the Lord at this point. Like Brother Kevin said, let's pray for Brother David, Sister Joanne, Corbin and Megan, for traveling mercies for them, coming back from their trip to Ireland and Scotland, I believe. Standing before you this morning reminded me of a story I read recently. It's back in 1788. Hans Grable in Juniata County, Pennsylvania. Very most likely an ancestor to our brother Hans this morning. Wilbur, me, our ancestor. Had a house church, Mennonite house church. It was a new community. And it got to the point where it was big enough that they called a minister. They had an ordination, and his son, John Jr., Hans is German for John, of course, so John Jr. Grable was ordained, and he stood up to preach that first Sunday morning. Not a word came out of his mouth. His father then came to the rescue, said a few sentences, and closed the service with a prayer. But young John applied himself, took a testament out with him when he would plow, and when the horses needed to rest at the end of the row, or the furrow, he would sit on the beam and study. And at the close of his life, he had served 50 years as a bishop. Anyway, I hope that doesn't happen to me this morning, but Wilbur, will you please come to my rescue? It does. The important thing is that we are gathered together to inspire one another to faithfulness to God and to each other, to be a blessing to the church, and to honor the Lord until He comes again. Not so much the eloquence that people, even back in those days, other denominations that had a great emphasis on emotional experience. There were some that would, you've probably heard of it as well, they would go into a den and close themselves off, a study or something, and pray until they would be filled with words, filled with eloquence, filled, they said, the Spirit of God, so that they could move a congregation. And there's some good in that. I don't like dull, monotonous sermons myself. But the important part is that we be moved, whether it be with a stammering tongue, to closer walk with the Lord. In 1833, a young priest named John Henry Newman became sick on a trip to Italy, stuck in bed far from home. And he had trouble finding a boat to take him back home to England. Finally, he boarded an orange boat headed for Marseille, France. But in the Straits of Bonifacio, the boat was becalmed for a while. Well, it might sound good compared to a storm, but not a whisper of wind would move the sails of that ship, and they were stuck there for a week, a whole week. And it is said that a dense fog surrounded the ship some of that time, and in the midst of that, still laying around because of his fever, he penned the lines of a hymn that you'll find there in your racks near the book, with your books. I might read that and we might sing it together. Lead kindly light. Almost 30 years later, in 1865, John Backus Dykes was walking through London on the Strand and heard a young fellow whistling a tune. He went back to Durham, his home, and wrote the music. He had this in mind, this hymn in mind, because it had already appeared in a few newspapers, although the author, John Henry Newman, had forgotten about it. The other people did not forget. While John Henry Newman was in Italy that time, when he got sick, he was in a town called Castro Giovanni. His fever had him in and out of consciousness. The light was too bright. It was garish, which is a word used in the hymn. While in that comatose state, coming out of his fever, he would say over and over again, "I have not sinned against the light." Isn't this a prayer for us in the times we are living in? Lead kindly light amid the encircling gloom. There's cloudiness. There's gloom with the way this world is shaping up for judgment. John Henry Newman titled these verses here. He didn't title them Lead Kindly Light. He called it The Pillar of the Cloud. The Lord uses the light of clouds to lead his people just as easily as he uses a pillar of fire. Let's read this hymn. Lead kindly light amid the circling gloom. Lead thou me on. The night is dark and I am far from home. Lead thou me on. Keep thou my feet. I do not ask to see the distant scene, one step enough for me. I was not ever thus, nor prayed that thou shouldst lead me on. I love to choose and see my path, but now lead thou me on. I loved the garish day, and spite of fears, pride ruled my will. Remember not past years. Just seems like in our latter years, we grow older. If there's anything else we would wish to forget, it would be our deeds done when pride ruled our will. There's nothing more we wish for God to not remember against us on the judgment day than those deeds we did when pride ruled. Remember not past years. Then the last verse, so long thy power has blessed me, sure it still will lead me on. O'er moor and fen, or crag and torrent till the night is gone. And with the morn those angel faces smile, which I have loved long since and lost a while. What does he mean there? Those angel faces smile. Is it the faces of the angels when he gets to glory that he kind of lost sight of by faith here in the midst of this difficulty? Or was it some kind of heavenly trance that he was used to being in during his morning meditations when he sensed the angel faces smiling? No, the story is much simpler. It goes on, it says that history tells us here that you can even go to his study today and you can see where he has had an altar, and in front of that altar on the wall he had the pictures of all his friends, many of his friends, some of whom he hadn't seen for a long time, some who had taken different paths. Or John had taken a different path from them. They were in completely different denominations. But he considered them angels. Have you ever had a friend that you thought about them? They're just kind of like an angel. John Henry Newman did. He kept them right there, smiling at him on his wall. That brings me to the second part of the sermon. We have some friends right here this morning. Some of them are smiling. Maybe they are real angels, at least some of the time. They are our mothers. We'd like to encourage you this morning. We have received the grace of life from you. God has smiled on us through you. Your faces are sought after by each and every one of the rest of us. Little boys and girls, teenagers, grown men, they all look for that familiar face of mother. Let's go to Proverbs 18, verse 22. He who finds a good wife finds benefits and receives cheerfulness from God. A few weeks ago, I took my dad with his foot in a cast on some drives around the Pennsylvania countryside. We went to the combine salvage place where my brother and I stole the keys out of all the combines when we were little, till we got caught and had to put them back. I remember back then, it was about 82 or 83, I believe. 1982 doesn't seem that long ago to me, but I think to some of the young people, it's getting to be back there pretty far, it seems. But I remember there at that business, the teenage boys of Henry Kider, the owner, the oldest one was named Ken. It was two boys. Ken helped us get a soda out of the machine when the quarters got jammed up in it and still no pop would fall out. Ken opened it up for us. He helped us little boys out in our time of need, gave us a soda. Now he's 55 years old and his wife was there, and they just talked a few hours with us. Had a really nice talk. His wife, Tabitha, was so concerned about my father and his foot. She helped him get out of the car. Told me to pull right up inside their shop. Lifted the huge doors to drive right up inside there so my father didn't have far to walk with his walker to the bathroom. She was fussing about herbs and essential oils that he could probably take for his foot to heal a little faster. You would have thought that he was her father-in-law or something. But then they shared with us how the other brother that I remember, his younger brother back then, ended up being led away by a selfish and worthless woman who managed to get him to sell the farm that his father deeded over to him. He sold it before it was ever in his name even. And then went to the Carolinas with her, and they blew it. All of it. Blew the money. And she ended up managing to turn him away from the rest of the family to the point where they haven't talked with him in years. He who finds a good wife finds cheerfulness from God. How true. Mothers, you are a metaphor of the church. According to the early Christians, they wrote a lot about that. Clement of Alexandria said, "The mother draws the children to herself, and we seek our mother, the church." Tertullian said, "Therefore, blessed ones, whom the grace of God awaits, you ascend from that most sacred bath, or baptism, of your new birth, and spread your hands for the first time in the house of your mother, together with your brethren." Another wrote, "Do not depart from your mother, the church, and the highest will be able to be merciful to you. I exhort the adults that they should be born again and run in arms, as it were, to their mother." Cyprian said, "Can he have God as his father before he has had the church as his mother?" You know how people think they know God but want nothing to do with the church? Proverbs 21 and verse 18. It is better to live in a desert than with a contentious, talkative, and quick-tempered woman. Talkative, meaning a gossip. Someone who talks in not a good way. Talks quickly before thinking, but also contentious and quick-tempered. Some more things that the early Christians wrote here. For with perfect propriety, Scripture has said that woman is given by God as a helper to man. It is evident then, in my opinion, that she will charge herself with remedying by good sense and persuasion each of the annoyances that originate with her husband in domestic economy. Or more simply put, her husband's rough edges and undesirable traits. She will charge herself with remedying by good sense and persuasion. And if he does not yield, then she will endeavor as far as possible for human nature to lead a sinless life. I just don't know how many men, grown men, have confided in me so far in my short life of the difficulty of living with a contentious woman. It's better to live in a desert. In wisdom here, this next little portion by the Apostolic Constitutions, early Christian writings as well, says, be sure to curb any spirit of contention as to all men, but particularly as to your husband, ladies. Otherwise, if he is an unbeliever or a pagan, he may have a cause for scandal or blaspheming God. Or if your husband is a Christian, he will be forced from his knowledge of the Scriptures to say that which is written in the Book of Wisdom, it is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. You wives, then demonstrate your piety by your modesty and meekness to all persons outside the church, whether they are women or men. Love of display is not for a lady, but a prostitute. Such women care little for keeping at home with their husbands. Instead, loosing their husbands' purse strings, they spend its supplies on their lusts, so that they may have many witnesses of their seemingly fair appearance. And devoting the whole day to their dressing table, they spend their time with their bought slaves. So they dishonor the Creator of men, as if the beauty given by him was nothing worthwhile. As you might expect, they become lazy in housekeeping, sitting like painted things to be looked at. Women are not to be deprived of bodily exercise. I think that last quote was Clement, and this one is as well. Nevertheless, women should not be encouraged to engage in wrestling or running. Instead, they are to exercise themselves in spinning, weaving, and overseeing the cooking if necessary. They should fetch with their own hands what is necessary from the store. Furthermore, it is no disgrace for them to apply themselves to the handmill, nor is it a reproach for a wife to occupy herself in cooking so that the food will be palatable to her husband. For she is a housekeeper and a helper. She who imitates Sarah will not be ashamed of that highest of ministries, helping travelers. That is back in the 2nd century, AD 195, most likely. Another one by Tertullian. Submit your head to your husbands and you will be sufficiently adorned. Busy your hands with spinning. Keep your feet at home and you will please better than by dressing yourselves in gold. Clothe yourselves with the silk of uprightness, the fine linen of holiness, and the purple of modesty. If you are adorned in this manner, you will have God as your lover. What kind of example are we giving our daughters? You mothers, especially, are you teaching them how to worry and fret about every sickness, flu, or germs, or childbirth, injuries? We want our young ladies to grow up strong against these common situations, facing these common things. Be strong. Wives and mothers, it is one thing to submit to your husband to the extent that you let him even do the worrying. And there are some ladies like that. They don't even worry about anything. He takes care of the worrying even. She can just rest. You rest in him and his leadership. But you can go a step further. A woman of God will calm her husband's fears. She'll rise to the occasion to speak comforting words from God when he most needs it. When he's outright scared, ask me how I know. There's a few things I would like to read, little anecdotes here from the early American Mennonite stories in Pennsylvania, some in Ohio. There's a lady named Anna Barr. She said, she recalled years later, she said, I love the earth. I love to put seeds in it and take good care of them. Men at the time, she remembered 5 decades later, men at the time knew very little about garden or milking cows. These were woman's duties, as included in a list sent back to Europe by Swiss visitors in Lancaster County in 1823. Quote, everything as far as the economy of the house is concerned, preparing the lamps, boiling the soap, preparing the starch, preserving the pears, fruit, cucumbers, preparing the baked products, the spinning, sewing, and milking. From the Barr's family's large flock of sheep came both clothing and bedding. Quote, the toweling, table linen, and underclothing were all linen. Anna would help to pool the flax, get it ready for watering, and then after a man would break it, which I suppose would be to beat it or to make it pliable, I don't know. I don't even pretend to know anything about this. She helped to swingle and heckle it. During the winter, she would spin thread that was woven into linen, ready for bleaching, quote, when the grass grew. Lay it out there in the spring. Regarding this work, she had a specific memory dating from her 10th year in 1814. My parents had a pet deer about 2 years old. She would be in the meadow during the day. When she would see me coming to water the linen, I'd keep watering that linen laying out on the grass, and then the sun would dry it again and just bleach it whiter and whiter, I guess. It made no difference if this little deer was laying in the cool shade or picking the green grass. She would come and commence her playing over the linen, and would trouble me very much indeed. To try to scare her off did no good whatever. As I was very particular to keep the linen smooth and in its place, I would stand and cry, but that did have no effect. I got the water I used out of a large stream that was very deep. It ran a sawmill, grist mill, and distillery. Most often the Mennonite farmers had their own distillery, and they would take their whiskey to Philadelphia and sell it. Getting a lot of money from that back in those days. I pushed the deer in this stream. This did no good. She enjoyed it very much. She would swim around and then jump out. So one day I got her to the edge of the bank and threw a blanket over her and pushed her in. The blanket being wet and over her head, she could not see or help herself. Fearing she would be drowned, my trouble increased. Seeing my brother at a short distance, I called him to come quick and get the deer out of the water. He came. It was quite a while before he got it out. It had good effect. She troubled me no more. Though released from working in the field, quote, at 16 years old, she didn't have to work out in the field anymore. Anna continued in the garden. She told how the local girls had sent Swiss sounds across the Berks County valleys. This is in Pennsylvania. They brought their Swiss traditions, calling out with long tin horns for the men to come for, quote, dinner. In her late teens, she recalled she had enjoyed taking her spinning wheel by horseback to a neighboring farm home where she and a girlfriend would compete to spin the longer skein of yarn. I don't even know the word. She even claimed that she had carried her spinning wheel along on horseback while fording the Susquehanna River. If a girl did not marry, she became literally a spinster. Such was Maria Mellinger, who lived alone. Actually, her dwelling, an old meeting house, later a schoolhouse next to the Mellinger meeting house, was only 200 steps from the farmhouse of her brothers. Anyway, she was the only, that this here was an Anna Weber keeping careful account of her output, of what all she produced, and she was the only one of the nine children in her family to not get married. In 1826, about the age of 30, she began to make notations in a singing school booklet that formerly belonged to her brothers and kept adding to them for the next 50 years in this little singing school booklet. And her notes for the year 1827 take us concretely into her daily life. Spun for Christian Weber, 15 dozen and 7 cuts flax. Made 2 shirts. Spun for Christian Meyer, 15 dozen, less 3 cuts flax. On the 15th of September, washed 3 days. Made 2nd crop hay, 2 days. Worked 2 days at the corn, cooked apple butter 1 day. Worked a half day in the garden for Maddie Shank. Another day, picked apples and made cider, cooked apple butter 1 day, washed 1 day, started to work for Maddie again on the 4th of October. Sewed for Christian Meyer, a shirt for Daniel, a dress for Ann, a dress for Barbara, 2 caps for Anna, 1 cap for Nancy. And the list goes on. Made 2 pair of trousers and a vest for Jacob Metzler. Made 1 pair of woolen gloves for John Hurst. Husked corn 1 day for John Weber. Just, I think, an encouragement to see what people in the past went through. Hard work. Memories of the 1833 meteor shower. Thought I would just read this. An unusual entry in Anna Weber's diary runs, in the night of November 12th, 1833, one saw a wonderful light apparition. It appeared many stars were flying, long, trailing beams. Early the next morning before daylight, Barbara Hess and a grandson, still dark, they were bringing a load of turkeys to Lancaster from their farm home in Warwick Township. It was so bitterly cold that the two tried to warm their feet among the turkeys. Then from the pre-dawn darkness of the sky shot a spectacular display of meteors. They were sighted all over the country. In East Hempfield, young Emmanuel Hershey, quote, saw stars falling like big snowflakes, leaving a fiery trail after them, disappearing in the sky with a flash. At the Red Lion Hotel in Clay Township, the normally carousing teamsters and drovers were reported to have wept and prayed, quote, while horses and cattle emitted, quote, unearthly yells. Barbara Hess and her grandson, also expecting the imminent end of the world, discussed turning back toward home. But then, in a motherly directive the family never forgot, she instructed the boy, keep on as long as you can. To the relief of many, on the following night, the stars seemed to be right back up in their places. Portraits of feminine capability. Here was a lady that would lift heavy bags of grain in the mill when no other help was present. Her impulsive nature and firm opinion seemed not to threaten her conviction that her husband should be the family's head. In other words, she still felt that he should be the head. When she disagreed with him, she gave her grandson the impression of willingly conceding. This, of course, was a male opinion. Even more admired, apparently, was Anna Furrer of Peckway. When barely 17, she married a 19-year-old Wes Lampeter farm boy, destined to be remembered as the outstanding Christian her. A young school teacher who boarded with them was later elected to the United States House of Representatives. He wrote that he had come to hold his hostess, Anna Her, in the highest regard. When he was young, he had known her well in her mid-30s and observed her behavior, quote, in many difficult and trying situations. This is years later, this retired congressman, John Strum, reflected that he had never known, quote, a lady of more equable temperament and obliging disposition. A loving and confiding wife, she was a constant, unwavering friend, just and generous to her domestics and neighbors, and above all, a sincere and devout Christian. Later, there was another little story here. It's the Mellingers and Dellingers. There was an unannounced arrival of an immigrant family from the Palatinate in Germany, preacher Johannes and Catherine Risser of Friedelsheim. Arriving by hired wagon, the Rissers wakened the Mellinger-Dellinger household near midnight. As the deacon quoted a scriptural welcome, Anna Dellinger received the guests with open arms and warmed them with a meal of, quote, milk soup and butter bread. It was, quote, no laughing matter to board 13 people. But after 3 weeks, the Mellinger and Dellinger faces, that's the hosts, seemed to be looking only, quote, friendlier to their guests. Imagine that. Some of us are getting pretty glad if some of them move on by that time. While at the deacon's insistence, the Rissers were preparing to homestead in Ohio. Anna was pressing on them not only bread for the journey, but also crocks of apple butter and preserved peaches and apple schnitz. Anna's daughter Maria, wife of neighbor John Grider, also struck the guests as, quote, very gentle and friendly, and one of the nicest women Katharina Risser had ever met. Anna Dellinger herself seemed to Catherine Risser as a veritable paragon of a wife and homemaker. Writing to her mother back in Germany, she said, "Cousin Anna is one of those women who has made a man happy, gentle in spirit and humble, not an angry word against her servants or children. Early in the morning, late in the evening, indefatigable, tireless, I believe. I have been with her now for 3 weeks and still have never yet noticed an angry expression on her face. I should like to say she is Martha and Mary in one person. Beautiful, perfect in face and form. Happy the man who has such a wife." That's how she ended her little part of the letter about her cousin. So appropriately, my prayer for our mothers this morning is, lead kindly light amid the encircling gloom. Do we men have anything to do with that? You better believe we do. Let's sing this song before we close. Lead kindly light amid the encircling gloom. Lead thou me on. The night is dark and I am far from home. Lead thou me on. Mercies are so great, and you have shined on us and have smiled upon us through our mothers this morning. Thank you so much for the privilege, those of us who are married, to be heirs together of the grace of life. We ask that our prayers be not hindered, dear God, that we would live and please you in such a way that it would draw more men unto you. Father, we ask for your spirit, and especially for the ladies today, as we think of them, and we want to bless them. We ask now for our dear brothers and sisters traveling near them, Lord. Pray for Brother Peter. And now we thank you for this opportunity to have gathered together in peace again. Bless each one. Dismiss us with your blessing. Amen. Anything you would like to add this morning, brothers? Singing, I believe it's a Sunday for Aurora at 2:30, and then also at La Coba. Trying to think of, you know, call Brother Peter, see if we could stop in and sing a song to him as well. He's right on Cleveland there. Go ahead, Brother Kip. That's right. I forgot. Yeah, it's Mount Vernon as well. So we got split up a little bit.
Is that at 2:30?
Yes, 2:30 as well, Mount Vernon. God bless you all. You can be excused.